I would ask everyone, would you please, all of you have been muted so that we can have a better quality of audio, but please turn off your video cameras. Not that we don't want to see you, we'd love to, but I think that it will make the connection a lot better. So thank you for joining us. Okay, here we go. Hey, this is not what I wanted. Okay, so we're recording. Okay, hello, everyone. I would like to welcome you, and hi, Alex.
Hello.
I welcome you to the presentation of the Pudendal Neuralgia Association's 2020 webinar series. This is our second presentation of this series. The topic for this afternoon is mindfulness, train your brain for optimal resilience and healing, using mindfulness to thrive during difficult times. And we are all experiencing some difficult times or uncertainties at this time. And this will be done by the very talented Dr. Alexander Millsbaugh. Now, at the conclusion of her presentation, Dr. Millsbaugh will answer as many questions as time will allow. Please remember that a response to a question is not intended and should not be taken as medical advice. So let's go ahead and start with, who is Dr. Alexandra Millsbaugh? Dr. Millsbaugh is the founder and owner of Four Directions Counseling LLC, Mind, Body, Heart, and Spirit. She has been in practice for over 10 years and provides professional consultations, seminars, trainings, specifically around sexuality issues, trauma, and pelvic and genital pain disorders. Dr. Millsbaugh is an AASECT certified sex therapist and licensed professional counselor in the state of Pennsylvania. She specializes in relaxation and stress management, as well as chronic pain and trauma. Dr. Millsbaugh is a professional presenter for sexuality and reproductive health education for local colleges, community agencies, and national conferences. She earned her master's in counseling psychology and human services from Lehigh University, and her master's and doctorate in human sexuality from Widener University. Alex is a certified master neurolinguistic programmer and mindfulness-based stress reduction trainer and consultant. She utilizes neurolinguistic programming, mindfulness-based stress reduction, and hypnosis in her work with clients, as well as cognitive behavioral therapeutic techniques. She also offers mindfulness training and educational consultations via Skype and FaceTime to clients around the world. Alex is a co-founder of the Alliance for Pelvic Pain and co-manages the Pelvic Messenger Blog Talk Radio. She serves on the faculty of the Clinical Foundations training course for the International Pelvic Pain Society and is co-chair of the Clinical Foundations course for the 2019 and 2020 conference. She is also a member of the American Counseling Association, the National Guild of Hypnotists, and the American Association of Sexuality Educators, Counselors, and therapists. What sets Dr. Millsbaugh's counseling practice apart from many others is that she specializes in incorporating specific techniques of neurolinguistic programming, including mindfulness and relaxation. Now, I can talk about Dr. Millsbaugh's credentials for hours. Of course, we don't want to do that because that's not what we're here for. So instead, I will direct you to her website, the number 4dcounseling.com. And without further ado, I turn it over to Dr. Milsbaum.
Thank you, Dari. It's a pleasure to be here. I am looking forward to offering and guiding everyone through these exercises today. Last year for the PNA webinar, I did do a very similar presentation, but it was more didactic and more informational. And that is the majority of the end part of this PowerPoint presentation. But I'm going to skip that didactic piece for today because with everything going on, I think what most people are really needing right now is hands-on exercises and ideas on what can you do now to feel better. And so I'm hoping that by the end of this 45-minute segment, I'll talk you through a variety of different exercises, and it's my hope that you find at least one of them, if not all of them, really helpful and useful in your own practice. So ultimately, if I had 2 hours, I would love to go into more detail as far as understanding the exposure to chronic stress, and which is chronic pain, and the cumulative trauma that that adds to the system, and how that changes specific brain structures that are responsible for pain processing, for emotional regulation, and optimal cognitive functioning. But again, all of that goes into, I've reviewed that last year during the same webinar series, so if you're wanting me to go into that, you can find that online under the Piedmont Neuralgia Association's website. I also did a pelvic and sexual pain 101 that's on my YouTube channel, and I go into the science of how the brain changes and what that means, et cetera. But again, for today's purposes, I really want to just get right to the point as far as what are some things that you can do now to help yourself feel better. And if we're not able to get the technological piece connected today as far as with the PowerPoint, I know that you'll have access to that, to the details of everything that I'm saying now. So don't worry about taking notes, but I do want you to have a pen and paper ready because some of the exercises I'm going to talk you through require some writing on your end. So if you don't have that already, try to get that while I'm going through a few other things right now. First and foremost, during this time when everyone's in a bit of an upheaval with your schedule and daily routines and even just normal life flow of what you're used to doing and who you're, where you're used to going and who you're used to seeing, it can be quite an upheaval to the nervous system, even if we are good at adapting and good at evolving at, and going with the flow. The nervous system still takes time to adapt. It still takes time to adjust. And we're seeing that more played out with the youth of today, with the children. If you're having to homeschool at the same time as work from home, and I'm sure you see some changes in your child's behaviors, even if it's just a little, you know, a little crankiness here and there that you're not usually used to. So we can feel that in ourselves, but if we're good at being distracted and not paying attention to how we're feeling, sometimes it can build up and manifest in other ways, such as increased pain or increased muscle tension, or you know, difficulty sleeping. So a lot of signs of an increased stress in the system, as well as, you know, signs of when these changes in the brain start to happen, can be very subtle, and sometimes they can be really obvious. So sometimes the subtle signs that we really need to start making more time and at least trying to discipline ourselves into regular routines and schedules to practice self-care, because if we don't schedule it in, it might not happen, and it's more likely not going to happen. If you're like me and the rest of most of the world, we can really get, we're trained that if we're not doing something, we're being lazy or we're wasting time. But there's a really important piece of being. I'm seeing so much around social media as far as Instagram and Facebook and all of those places. Really, a lot of people out there encouraging people to meditate more, encouraging people to return to life and enjoy life, enjoy the family, enjoy nature, enjoy things that you maybe normally didn't have an opportunity to. And then I hear my, you know, from both myself and my clients saying, hold on, I'm now working from home and homeschooling and doing this and doing that. I feel like I have less time now that I'm not on my normal schedule. So I want to give you some ideas on how to help maintain a calm and regulated nervous system through these very unknown times. So the first and foremost, we want to create a self-care routine in the morning and at night. And that routine maybe is only 10 minutes, but 10 minutes can be powerful. If anything, what I want to talk you through some exercises is today is to realize how quickly we can feel better, that it can only actually take 5 or 10 minutes that can really make a difference between having a great night's sleep or having a really good start to the day versus not. I remember there was a great, I think it was Good Will Hunting or one of those great movies back in the 90s, 80s or 90s, where the movie started off with him rowing down the river and one of the quotes was, a day that started with rowing was always better than a day that didn't start with rowing. So I feel like that about mindfulness and being present with the self. If our day starts and ends with us checking in with ourselves and trying to separate ourselves out from the noise and to who we really are, and that can be who did I try to be, or who am I trying to be, or who am I trying to please, versus what feels good for me, how am I feeling here? Just checking in with that can be powerful enough just to be able to reground yourself. So again, I encourage you to have some type of self-care routine in the morning and the evening. In the morning, we're wanting more energy, right? We want to wake up slowly, we want to ease into the day, but we really want to try to uplift ourselves. So there are three main yoga poses that I recommend that can be really useful for this. So the first is child's pose. And again, I actually don't have these images even on my PowerPoint, but it's child's pose, and you can Google what these poses are. The second pose that you want to flow into are actually twists. So you can sit cross-legged and just gently twist to the right. Pardon me, there's a truck driving by. Twist to the right, you know, kind of squeezing out our spine really helps detox the system, really helps get the blood flowing up the spine, which can help circulation, and nerves like circulation. So the more we have circulation to all parts of the body, the less the nerves are going to be aggravated and super sensitive. So we really want to get the blood flowing when we're waking up. So if we twist to the right and then bend forward and then twist to the left, and then I change the cross of my legs and then do that again, twist to the right and then bend forward and then twist to the left. And again, if you have with pudendal neuralgia, you can do this standing up. So what you want to do is you actually want to stand next to the wall, and you can kind of use the wall to help you twist both ways, but you want to do it slowly and gently, both kind of twisting in and twisting out. Again, imagining your spine is a little bit of a washcloth, and we want to wring out that tension and wring out the toxins. And again, just doing those twists and with the breathing can really help get the circulation going, which can help decrease headaches and decrease pain in the morning. And then the third pose that I like to do is a few sun salutations, but again, sometimes that might mean just standing in Tadasana, right? Standing in mountain pose. And again, depending on the severity of your pain and where your pelvic pain is at the current moment or any pain that you're in, some days you can do sun salutations, sometimes you can't. And that's okay. We just want to, even setting the intention of saying, I'm going to take these first 5 minutes of waking up and gently easing into the day. And I want to bend forward, and I want to stretch out my back, and I want to stretch out my sides, and I want to get the blood flowing, and just breathing deeply during those exercises. I do have another YouTube video that I'll be uploading soon to my YouTube channel that actually talks you through that and can demonstrate some of those poses for you. I am not a yoga instructor. I did go through a little bit of teacher's training, but I didn't finish. But I got a lot of my ideas from amazing women out there like Dusty Ann Miller and Shelley Prosco, who have great yoga ideas for pelvic pain. Anyway, so standing or sitting can be done mindfully. And so, because I specialize in pelvic pain, I try to think of as many poses and things that we can do standing, since sitting can create a lot of pain for most of my clients. So when we're standing, we want to do that with intention. We want to have both legs facing forward, right? If you go to physical therapy, they're all about alignment and how that helps balance the pelvis and balance the weight of the abdomen and the torso on the pelvis. So we really want to help uplift the system. Another thing about uplifting the spine and uplifting the body and holding a power pose is it's something simple. We stand every day, so we can do so in a mindful way, which is about checking in with the system. Because mindfulness is about being in the present moment without trying to change anything, without judgment, simply becoming the observer of your experience. And that can be the observer of your mental experience, the observer of your physical experience, the observer of your emotional experience, or the observer of your spiritual experience. And the 4D wheel, which is the method that I the theoretical and therapeutic approach that I utilize, the quadrant of the spirit is about connection and disconnection. So how connected do you feel to yourself? How connected are you feeling with your partner? How, or your family? How connected are you feeling with your friends or your coworkers? And in a time like this, sometimes we can feel more connected than we ever have. And sometimes we can feel more disconnected than we ever have. But we're certainly all discovering the power of FaceTime and video messaging to keep us connected. But I think we're all also really discovering how our skin and our energies really ache and crave to be around the physical energies of other people. So again, mind, body, heart, spirit, we can really become mindful in all of those ways. And simply standing, and that standing pose or mountain pose, it's called Tadasana in yoga, can be done in a mindful way. And with maintaining pelvic health, we want to keep our feet standing forward, our feet right before, pointing forward, heels right underneath the sits bones, right underneath the hips. And we're going to pull up on the front of the thighs, the back of the thighs. We want to imagine zipping up the front of the spine. And what's important about that, I'm sure your PT has talked to you about posture, but intentionally opening up the chest and having opening the spine in the front helps the body breathe. It gives more space for the diaphragm to move up and down and helps us breathe even more deep breaths. Helps us increase our lung capacity when we practice breathing exercises. But if we can't have a breathing exercise very effective if we're hunched over, if we're bent over. If we're standing up straight and really elongating the front of the spine, we're allowed to breathe more deeply, we're able to breathe more deeply, but we also help the vagal nerve flow more fluidly. So the vagal nerve is a nerve that actually is the only nerve that does not, that bypasses the spine, which is why people can actually be a quadriplegic but still experience orgasm, because the vagal nerve is the one main nerve responsible for orgasm, but it's also responsible for a lot of our autonomic nervous system and processes to occur. So the more hunched over we are, the more compressed the front of the spine is, the harder our nervous system has to work to get everything going. So just being hunched over for a long period of time can actually increase the volume of the autonomic nervous system. And what does that mean? That can actually increase anxiety. It can slow down metabolism and digestion. It can make all of everything that's on autopilot, everything that's on automatic, which is why it's called the autonomic nervous system. Everything that's on autopilot just feels a little bit harder to do for the nervous system. So every time we practice an open posture and help the vagal nerve breathe and help the front of the spine and help us breathe a little bit more deeply, the nervous system is really able to breathe and kind of have more of a steady flow. And that's ideal for circulation. That's ideal for a happy nervous system. And that's ideal for lowering pain. The other thing that we do with an open posture, so if you're standing and practicing this right now, we want to, again, make sure your feet are face forward. And again, the mindfulness is always checking in to say, is my body doing what I want it to do? Am I pulling up on my thighs? Am I pulling up on the front of my spine? Am I rolling my shoulders back? Chin parallel with the floor, eyes on the horizon or above, because all of that is uplifting to the spirit. So there's a great TED talk by Amy Cuddy, Cuddy, and she talks about the power of body language. She talks about the power of the body over the mind, as well as the power of the mind over the body. But in that, she talks about, you know, how if we're gazing down, if we're hunched over, if we have a closed posture, that actually increases cortisol, which is the stress hormone, and decreases testosterone. And testosterone, among other things, helps us feel confident or not, courageous or not. And so if we have a lower testosterone, our confidence goes down. So actually, just having poor posture can increase anxiety and increase depression and low self-esteem. When we do the opposite, when we're having an uplifted posture and an open chest and uplifted eyes, when we're looking at the horizon or above, that decreases cortisol. Just holding it for 2 minutes decreases cortisol significantly in the system and increases testosterone. So it can help increase that sense of hope, that sense of believing, and that sense of courage that, yes, I've never done mindfulness before, but I know I can practice it. Or, okay, I've had 10 different doctors tell me horror stories of whether I can heal or not. And, you know, if we increase testosterone, if we increase that place of confidence, we can start to believe in the power of the body. And with that, I am going to point out one of my favorite books and authors, Joe Dispenza. And this is very similar book to Dawson Church's new book, Mind Over Matter, which is also phenomenal. But Joe Dispenza and Dawson Church have done phenomenal brain research, and they go into how mindfulness changes the brain, how mindfulness and intentional focus or intentional attention on what we're feeling, what we're sensing, what we're thinking, what we're doing, who's around us, what's happening. All of that really heals the parts of the brain that change with chronic stress and trauma. And it can change in a matter of 3 to 4 weeks, let alone, and some studies are actually showing 10 days. So it's pretty phenomenal, the power of these brain exercises. And we want to remember that it took many years to develop a chronic pain and chronic illness situation. Even if your experience was the pain started at a particular moment, such as a surgery or a car accident, or, you know, something, a fall or something like that, the nervous system was primed prior to that. So what we understand in pain education is our nervous system can be primed and really charged up with cumulative stress, with cumulative trauma, and then, you know, that one accident or that one surgery, or, you know, it was just the straw that broke the camel's back, as that expression goes. And so it can take a while for the nervous system to get primed, to be ready to kind of jump into that chronic illness phase or chronic pain phase. And so we want to know that it can take time for our nervous system to relearn a way of being, relearn that it can be in that calm, restorative mode. And if you've been in chronic pain for a while, it feels impossible. And I know exactly what that feels like. But I'm here to show you, both through personal experience, but also, again, through these books and tons of research out there, that if you can stay self-disciplined and keep up with these practices, your brain is absolutely going to heal within 10 to 21 days. And then the nervous system and the rest of your whole system will absolutely follow. So I talked you through a simple way of practicing mindfulness, which is simply just standing and trying to hold an open posture, even if it's just for 2 minutes, can really have a significant effect on your cortisol levels and your testosterone levels, all of which are really important when we're talking about the body being able to heal. Because if the body is in fight or flight mode, it's saying, I don't have time to heal right now. Right. So evolutionary wise, if we are in front of a mountain lion, that's not when my body's going to work on healing that open wound. It's going to wait till I'm back into the safety of the village before it starts to heal. And so the more we can downshift our nervous system, the more we can get into that calm restorative phase, and even what some authors are calling the relaxation response, which is even more of it's actually the opposite of fight or flight mode. Right. So fight or flight mode can stop or halt or significantly slow down cellular regeneration. The relaxation response actually speeds up cellular regeneration, which is really exciting. So we can heal faster than a lot of Western science shows that we can heal, because we have a lot of power in how we can emotionally self-regulate. So another way to do that, so we talked about standing poses. We talked about creating a routine in the morning and the evening. I talk about setting intentions, and check your expectations as well. So Alex Ortner, O-R-T-N-R, he is the brother of Nick and Jessica Ortner, who got famous with the tapping solution, that when they talk about the meridian tapping method, which I absolutely recommend. That's one of my magic wands that I use. So if you don't know about meridian tapping, I highly suggest you look up the tapping solution. They now have an app and everything, and tons of YouTube videos out there. But their brother, Alex Ortner, did an interview with them during one of the World Summits, and he made a really great point about, you know, feeling the importance of feeling successful as a way of motivating. So it's important to me that you feel that these types of exercises can feel successful if I want you to feel motivated to continue practicing it. And one of his tips is to, when you're setting intentions or your expectations for the day, we either want to say, okay, let me put one big thing on my to-do list, or three little things. But either, you know, if we put five big things or even three big things, it's highly unlikely that we might finish all of those things. And that can be very demotivating, and we're not allowing ourselves to feel that sense of satisfaction and pleasure and success at the end of every day. So when we're setting intentions for the day, again, we want to start with a 5 or 10 minute routine of just checking in with ourselves, maybe doing a few of those yoga poses, maybe just standing and doing some diaphragmatic breathing. But during that time, we want to set intentions. And the 4D wheel talks about the importance of two intentions. So the 4D wheel approach says we want to set an intention for what we want to release, but we also want to set an intention for what we want to invite in. And so if we follow Alex Ortner and say, okay, either one big thing or three little things, right? Maybe I'll set an intention to release my worry of the coronavirus, and that might be my big one thing, right? And what I want to invite in is maybe a sense of peace, a sense of trust that we as humanity will absolutely pull together, and we're gonna get through this, right? So that might be one big intention of release, one big intention of invitation. But we, when I say setting intentions in the morning, we want to make sure that we're doing both of those things. Not only what do I want to let go of, what do I want to release? Maybe I want less pain. But instead of just saying I want less pain, I'm also gonna say I want more pleasure. Right, so how can I seek out pleasure today? Maybe it's enjoying a mindful eating of one of those little chocolate eggs. or maybe I'm just going to enjoy the smell of one of these spring flowers, right? How can we insert pleasure into our day? And that's really important as well. Finally, we want to take breaks. So again, even if it's a 60-second break every hour on the hour, which is sometimes the most I can get out of lawyers that I work with or high-end CEOs, or we take a 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, 5 minutes there, we want to make sure that we're taking breaks throughout the day. Optimal brain functioning, a lot of that research says we want to take a break every hour. Absolutely, if not every 90 minutes. And if it's every 90 minutes, we want to make sure it's closer to a 10-minute break. But if it's every 30 minutes, it only has to be about a 2-minute break for us to be able to see that reset in the brain. So creating a self-care routine in the morning and in the evening. Again, it does not have to take that long. Creating a daily schedule and a daily rhythm. Setting intentions. Taking breaks. And again, intentional attention. So quality over quantity. So I have two different three-word catchphrases that I try to use as far as some of the healing techniques that I'm going to talk you through now. So the first one is write it, move it, tap it. So writing, I'm going to talk you through, I'm going to describe two ways that you can do mindful journaling. And we're not going to do all of those right now because that can take up time, but I'm going to talk you through one of them. Move it. I'm going to talk you through what's called brain spotting. It's a visualization that really helps the brain process whatever it is that feels stuck, particularly if there's images associated with any of those feelings that feel stuck. And third, it's tapping. So the meridian tapping. So I'm going to talk you through that. The second catchphrase that I use is breathe, believe, be. Breathing is absolutely step one. With any mindfulness or meditation or healing exercises, no matter what we're doing, we need to breathe. If your PT hasn't taught you that already, I'm sure they have. I want to remind how important it is to breathe for many reasons. One, breath is what carries oxygen and improves circulation around the body. So we want to make sure that we're breathing as deeply as possible, as often as possible. Commonly, when we're starting to practice breathing techniques, some people might even feel a little lightheaded because they're not used to that oxygen, the amount of oxygen in their brain as they get when they're actually practicing breathing techniques. So I'm going to talk you through some of my favorite breathing techniques. The second piece is believing, right? How often do you spend, how much time each day do you spend believing in yourself, or at least in increasing the information and the knowledge that you need in order to believe in your body's ability to heal, in your heart's ability to heal, in your mind's ability to change its habits, etc. So we really want to take intentional time each day to believe and visualize what it is that we want. and to believe that we can have what we want. And finally, third is being, right? So it's back to practicing mindfulness, practicing being mode instead of doing mode. But I also mean visualizing through that concept of be or being, right? Breathe, believe, be. So being is about visualizing what it is, not only believing that I can have what I want, but can I really visualize it? Can I see it? Can I hear it? Can I taste it? Can I smell it? Can I feel it? And sometimes guided visualizations can help you get there. That's why I do a lot of personalized meditations for folks, because if we can use your memories or your specific details of what you want, that can really help increase the power of being able to visualize it. But visualizing is also an exercise of the right brain, which helps emotional regulation. So the more we practice the ability, so the brain's ability and capability of visualization, we actually improve our ability to emotionally self-regulate and improve our ability to heal faster. Because what's one thing that's really important in Joe Dispenza's work and Dawson Church's work and a lot of amazing healers and inspirational writers out there is the power of visualization and the necessity for us to be able to see and visualize what it is that we want. It's all over sports psychology, right? I heard an Olympic coach on NPR a few years ago say that if she was training an athlete and if that athlete was unable to visualize themselves with the gold medal around their neck on that podium, that she wouldn't even train them. So, you know, all coaches and all athletes know the power of visualization. So let's go back to the top. So write it, move it, tap it. So what I want you to do, if you've got your pen and paper, I want you to write, now normally it would be 1 through 20, but due to time, we're just going to shorten it for the exercise. So I want you to write 1 through 10. So you're writing a list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Go ahead and do that now. Okay, so there's two ways of the importance of writing. So one way of writing is just free writing, right? Basic journaling, not necessarily a dear diary, but more of a as if you're trying to transcribe your thoughts as they're happening. So kind of a mind dump. So free writing can certainly be really useful and helpful and help us be able to see what am I thinking. But sometimes for some people, free writing can actually serve to rev them up and get them more agitated or more anxious. So mindful journaling, the way we do that is, again, this 1 through 20 process. So for all of the odd numbers, we're going to write the thought, and we're actually going to write what I call the summary of the thought. So it's only going to be one or a few words of what are you thinking. So you're not writing it in full sentences, right? If I'm thinking about the news, I might just say news. If I'm thinking about an illness or a pain or a function, I might say pain. Right, we want to summarize what is that neural net, right? If I could collect all of those thoughts that I'm thinking right now and put them in a file folder, what would I label that file folder? And that's what I want to do, right? And certainly, if anyone else cleans and organizes as a coping skill, you know, it's okay. If I'm going to organize this drawer, what might I label that drawer, right? The silverware drawer, but I won't, you know. So on the odd numbers, we're going to write the summary of the thought. And on the even numbers, you're going to tune into the physical body and you're going to just notice what's happening there. And it might be the same thing, but I really encourage you to try to check in with all parts of your body every time we get to an even number. So it might be tightness in the chest. It might be dry mouth from speaking. It might be pain. It might be cramping in the stomach, or it might be tension in the shoulders, right? Whatever it is, you bring your attention to the physical body and you just write, you summarize it and write that down. So what we're doing is we're going back and forth between what do we notice that's happening in the mind, what do we notice that's happening in the body, and we kind of keep going back and forth. And you'll see what that does for you as you do the exercise. But what we're doing physiologically in the brain is it's a left and right brain exercise. Left brain is usually the monkey mind that always has an opinion about things, always has chatter going on. And the right brain is the part of the brain that can scan the body and really kind of cue into sensory information. So I'm going to talk you through that right now. So number one, notice what you're thinking. summarize it and write it down in one, two, or three words. Two, notice the physical body, notice what you're feeling, and write that down. Three, and the purpose of moving a little quickly is also to just help the brain kind of summarize it, recognize it, write it down, and then be able to move forward. So sometimes this can take practice to keep it moving, because the brain, a brain that's stressed or a brain that's in pain, really likes to kind of grab onto something and ruminate it and spin on it, kind of like a repeating record. But this intent, again, the intention is to keep it moving. So three, notice the thoughts, summarize it, and write it down. Four, notice a physical sensation, write it down. Five, notice what you're thinking, notice the thoughts, summarize it, label it, write it down, one or a few words. Six, bring your attention to the physical body. Maybe start, you know, if you scanned kind of from the top down first, maybe start from the bottom up. Notice if you notice what you notice. Write it down. Seven, notice your thoughts. Summarize it. Write it down. Eight, notice the physical body. Notice a sensation that's speaking to you. And write that down. Nine, notice the thoughts. And what would you label that thought cluster? In one or a few words, write that down. And 10, bring your attention to the physical body. Notice what you feel. And write that down. Good. So again, normally this process, it would be 1 through 20. And sometimes on a bad day, I go all the way to 30 or 40 before I really feel a shift. But what you tend to notice is the brain, it helps the brain kind of just compartmentalize things and kind of say, oh yeah, okay, that's that, and puts it away. And commonly sometimes, you know, we feel maybe really tight in the beginning, but by number 10 or by number 15, we notice ourselves taking a deeper breath or the muscles relaxing a little bit, or maybe even the headache or the pain moving, right? Because energy can move around the body and create different sensations around the body. So on my YouTube channel, Dr. Charlie Curtis talks you through the whole mindful journaling process. He actually goes through, I think, 3 or 4 videos going into the science and the theory and everything around it. So if you're interested more in that, if you're wanting someone to really talk you through in a meditative way, you can check that out on my YouTube channel. So that's the writing piece. Again, you can free write and kind of mind dump and just get it out for 5 minutes, or you can do this 1 to 20 exercise and every other one, you know, it's thought, physical sensation, thought, physical sensation. So that's writing it. So when you stand back and look at what you wrote, there's a lot of information here, right? So one, I want it to be validating for you. I want you to see, wow, look at everything that's on my mind. Look at everything that my brain is processing and trying to figure out. That's a lot. So can I give myself a pat on the back and say, yes, you're handling a lot, you're managing a lot. And it's right here in black and white. The second thing is all of the even numbers. Obviously your body, you tuned in and to see what, you know, the information there can be, what is my body asking me for, right? Am I thirsty? Can I go get a drink of water? Am I hungry? Do I need a snack? Am I tired? Do I need to allow myself to rest for a little while? Or can I set an intention to go to bed an hour earlier because I'm feeling tired right now, right? So this is a way to, again, not only validate our current experience, but it's a way to really tune in and pay attention and try to offer ourselves what it is that we're needing as a very basic way of self-care. So the second part is move it, right? Write it, move it, tap it. So moving it is about moving images that might get stuck in your mind. Maybe you saw a scan that the doctor showed you that they didn't like, or maybe you've seen a lot of horrible images on the news recently or ever. Maybe you have some of your own traumatic memories of car accidents or something like that. I don't want you to pick something too intense for these reasons, obviously, for this purpose right now during the presentation, because obviously I'm not there and I can't support you and care for you individually. But pick something that feels as far as an intensity level, you know, below a five, 1 through 5. But what we do is we put that image that triggers us. And maybe it's a family member that's getting on our nerves right now. I actually used this last week. My dog passed away, and I needed to kind of be able to get right back into work and doing some other webinars. So what I did to help process the grief was this brain spotting exercise. And so what you do is you imagine putting that image on a picture frame, and you literally hold it with your hands in front of you. Imagine holding it in your hands in front of you. And if it's a collection of images, go ahead and make a collage. So have the image in front of you, and what I want you to do is imagine, and this can be more effective if you close your eyes to really be able to see it, but I want you to bring it down so you're almost looking down on it. And what that does is it helps decrease the power that it has over you. Commonly, if something feels powerful over us, or if we're feeling powerless to it, oftentimes the subconscious will put, and our brain will put the image up high, right? We hear, oh, we put them up on a pedestal and that sort of thing. So visualize it. The visual piece of this is really important in shifting the brain and the nervous system's reaction and response to it. So whatever that image is, if it's an image or a collection of images, first you want to bring it down. So you want to imagine holding it. You want to bring it down so you're looking down on it. Imagine there's a switch of black and white and color, and I want you to switch it to black and white. And then find that focus knob and imagine making it blurry. So you're intentionally making the image or images blurry and out of focus. And you still know what those images are, but you know, you don't need to see them in color and in clarity, because that can intensify the reaction of the nervous system. So we're bringing it down, making it black and white and blurry. And then we're moving it around in our visual field. So again, you're holding it, imagine holding it, and with your eyes open or closed, but this does tend to work better for most people if their eyes are closed, because they can really see it. As you move it all, you keep moving it left and right, but all over the place, right? So we're moving upper right, upper left, lower right, lower left, right? And we're just kind of continuing to move it around, always going left to right. And in the fMRI scans, what they show is you literally see almost a bouncing cluster of lights. So we're forcing the hemispheres of the brain to communicate by moving the image to the left and right visual fields. We're literally moving it to the right hemisphere. We're literally moving it to the left hemisphere. And that it's an amazing trauma technique, and it really just helps shift the reaction of the nervous system. So again, what we've done in as far as the moving piece of write it, move it, tap it. Any images that represent what you're stressed about, or any images that trigger a stress response, we want to pull it lower in the visual field, make it black and white and blurry, and then we move it left to right all over the place, back and forth for a good 3 to 5 minutes. So you just want to kind of keep moving it. And maybe after a minute and a half, you shrink it to half its size. And then after another minute or two, shrink it again and shrink it again. So you're continuing to move it and shrink it. And then finally, when it's like really small, we just want to imagine it going farther and farther away, kind of the end of the Star Wars movie, until it's just a speck. And then we allow ourselves to erase that speck and intentionally bring up an image that easily makes you smile. And then we want to click save on that image. All right, so that's moving it. So we want to help our brain by moving the images that create a stress response. You know, again, it could be an image of a person. It could be an image of test results. It could be, you know, an image of a doctor that we didn't like. Whatever it is, we just want to keep moving the image back and forth, left and right, after we've made it black and white and blurry. Shrink it as we go along. And then when it's really small, we want to see it go farther and farther away, erase it, and then replace it with a clear image of something that helps you easily smile, easily brings a smile to your face. So that's moving it. Finally, tapping. So tapping is a meridian tapping technique. Very similarly, it stimulates the left and right hemispheres of the brain, and it also stimulates natural stress reduction points on the body. The points are later on in the PowerPoint. You can see the points there. And for purposes of time, I'm not going to talk you through that right now because I usually like to take about 5 to 10 minutes for that. But I absolutely encourage you to go into tapping. So anything that hasn't been released through writing it and moving it, tapping is almost guaranteed to give you that final shift, that final release and relief of what you're feeling. So again, that's all on my YouTube channel. You can go to tappingsolution.com for more information and tons of videos. They just had the 12th World Summit on tapping, I think. So a lot of information, a lot of resources out there, but that's one of my magic wands that I use in my work. So we want to write it, move it, tap it, and that can be maybe your, I encourage that to be really your evening self-care routine. It doesn't have to take that long. Again, maybe 10 to 15 minutes tops to do all of that, particularly when you're practiced in it. And it's a great way to relieve the stress of the day and to help prep your nervous system for a great night's sleep. A common sign that your nervous system is stuck in fight or flight mode is if you wake up at the same time every day, in the middle of the night, particularly between 3 and 4 a.m. So if you wake up at the same time every night, again, but usually around 3 to 4 a.m., that is a sign that the nervous system is just really stuck in that fight or flight mode, because around that time is usually when the body is dipping into that deeper level of sleep. But a system that's used to being in fight or flight mode actually feels uncomfortable relaxing. So when the body starts to relax, sometimes during a deep meditation, sometimes that can actually increase more or spark an anxiety or a panic attack for some people because the system just isn't used to it. So we want to slowly guide the system into that practice. But if you're someone that wakes up commonly between 3 and 4 a.m., that's a sign that we really want to help the body experience that calm, relaxed mode throughout the day, so it learns that that is a safe way of being. It needs to learn that it's a safe mode to be in. So then when you're dipping into that deeper level of sleep overnight, when you're sleeping, the body won't wake you up. It won't wake yourself up because what right now it's waking you up and saying, hold on, you're relaxing, something's wrong, because it's unfamiliar, right? Anything that's unfamiliar to the nervous system and to the brain is deemed unsafe until proven otherwise. So that's what's happening. So again, if you can do this, write it, move it, tap it right before bed every night, it's a way to really release and help calm the system and help the brain process your day, so that way you can fall into a deeper level of sleep. So I'd like to finish with just some breathing exercises. Three of my favorite. So the first two are very similar. We divide the inhalation by three and then exhale. Or we divide the exhalation by three. So we'll start with dividing up the inhalation and exhaling completely. So I want you to exhale completely and then breathe in a little bit, pause, a little bit more, pause, inhale completely, pause, and exhale completely. Good. Two more times. Inhale a little bit, pause, a little bit more, pause, inhale completely, and exhale completely. Good, one more time. Inhale a little bit, pause, a little bit more, pause, inhale completely, pause, and exhale completely. Good. Now we're going to try the same thing, but opposite. So we're going to inhale completely and slow down the exhalation by dividing it up into three parts. So inhale completely. Pause, exhale a little bit, pause, a little bit more, pause, exhale completely. Good. Inhale completely. Good. Exhale a little bit, pause, a little bit more, pause, exhale completely. Good. One more time. Inhale completely. Exhale a little bit, pause, a little bit more, pause, exhale completely. Good. So that's the kind of three-part inhalation or three-part exhalation. The third one is I call the bumblebee breath, but you're basically inhaling completely and you're humming and try to have the hum last as long as you, as possible. For the first time yesterday, I had a client that was able to hum longer than I was. So that was great. So go ahead and exhale completely. And then inhale completely and hum. Good, and I can't hear you, but if you're still going, well done. Go ahead and do it. Let's do it one more time. Inhale completely. And exhale with a hum. Good. So that's one of my favorite ones. Certainly a breathing exercise that's easy to do is just singing. You know, pick your favorite song and sing. When we sing, we are naturally taking a deeper breath and allowing the exhalation to last as long as possible, depending on who you're listening to. Some vocalists are able to last longer than others. So singing and humming is great because it's a breathing exercise, which helps calm the system. But the vibration of humming is also very soothing to the system. That's why they make those vibrating things for babies to sleep on, right? Vibration feels really, really good for the system and for the nervous system. So breathing in and humming is definitely one of my favorite ways of breathing. Another way that I'd like to say that I forgot about is counting. So if we count in our heads, you know, breathing in for 5 counts, holding for 5 counts, and breathing out for 5 counts, all of that works to slow down the breath, but it's also occupying the left brain. So again, the left brain is the monkey mind. It always has an opinion. It's always jabbering. And by counting, it really helps occupy it. So it's hard to think about other things when you're counting. That's where the whole counting sheep concept comes from when you're trying to go to sleep. So if you're breathing and counting, that can be a way to slow the breath and deepen the breath at the same time. And bringing your awareness to how deeply you're breathing too. Sometimes we don't realize we're breathing shallowly until we start counting and to see how long our inhalation and exhalation is lasting. So what I would like to talk you through to finish off is a quick mindfulness exercise, in addition to all the others that you just learned, which is I Spy, right? If you've ever played I Spy before, it's my favorite way of practicing mindfulness. So we want to play I Spy with all of our senses, and then we go into a visualization way of playing I Spy. So I'll talk you through that now. So take a moment to look around the room, right? Take a look to look around you and notice what you see. Maybe you noticed something that you didn't see before. And remember to breathe. Good. And if you want, you can close your eyes for this, but I want you to notice what you hear. What sounds are in the room? And remember to breathe slowly and gently. Notice what you smell. Are there any aromas in the room? And remember to breathe. Notice any tastes. Are there any tastes in the mouth? Good, and remember to breathe. And finally, what do you feel kinesthetically? What does your skin feel? So can you notice the temperature of the air against your skin? Maybe there's a soft breeze. Maybe you feel the texture of your clothing. Or how your earrings feel as they're on your ears. Just notice what you feel. Good, and remember to breathe. And now that we've just taken a moment to check in with all of our senses, we've also just done a mindfulness exercise where we've cued into what's happening around us in the present moment. And that helps create a place of safe, a sense of safety in the nervous system because you just checked in with your environment. And so that allows the system to be more willing to go into an imaginary or visualization space. So now I would like you to imagine seeing something that easily brings a smile to your face. Imagine that now. Good. Now I want you to imagine hearing something that easily brings a smile to your face. Hearing something that makes you smile. Imagine that now. Now imagine smelling something that makes you smile. Imagine smelling something that easily brings a smile to your face. And maybe a lot of you intentionally sniffed and took a deep breath. It's amazing what the body does on cue. And now imagine tasting something that easily brings a smile to your face. What's one of your favorite things to taste? Good. And finally, imagine feeling something that easily brings a smile to your face. Maybe it's a hug from a child or a warm, comfortable blanket. Or feet in the sand. What is something kinesthetically, imagine feeling that, something that brings a smile to your face? Good, and just notice how you feel. And take note of which one of those five senses felt strongest. Which one were you most easily able to visualize? Which one had a more sensory reaction, sensory response? Because we all have certain senses that are stronger for us than others. And so I always say that can be your anchor in neurolinguistic programming. We call that an anchor. So that can be your anchor to say, okay, when I'm really wanting my body to try to shift gears, I'm going to imagine hearing this sound, or I'm going to imagine smelling this, or I'm going to put that sound on, or I'm going to intentionally make it to smell it. So just take note of which one felt more powerful to you, and that can be really helpful in helping your nervous system shift when you're wanting it to shift. So again, all of the science and a lot of the more details of why the techniques like this work and other ideas of mindfulness are on the PowerPoint that you will have access to, and I'll open the floor to questions.
Any questions, anyone? You can use the chat or you can unmute yourself to ask the question.
Okay, well, you can all certainly email me if you think of anything. Dr. A. Millspaugh at 4dcounseling.com. Again, that information's on the PowerPoint. I'm sure Dara can give you access to that information. Lots of great resources on my website, lots of great resources on my YouTube channel. And Dr. Charlie Curtis also, we uploaded a lot of his new mindfulness information and some of his meditations on the website under his name. So I would definitely check that out.
Okay, Alex, there is a question. Says, yes. Where is the PowerPoint? So
I guess
would you like me to email that to participants?
Yes, you may email it to the participants.
Okay.
Are you able to email it in a PDF format to them?
Yeah, I should be able to convert it, yes.
Okay. If not, I can send it to you as well.
Okay, that sounds good. Can we watch this presentation again?
I believe so, because we recorded it.
We are recording it, and the plan is, of course, once we listen to it and make sure that it worked technologically decent sound, then we will email it to all participants who signed up for the webinar. Yes.
Great.
Any other questions? Well, thank you so much.
Yes, you're very welcome. It was my pleasure.
Well, actually, I wanted to thank everyone. I know that these are very stressful times, and I really do appreciate everyone taking the time to share this webinar with us, and especially you, Alex, for the generosity of your time.
Yes.
I volunteered the time to do this, and it's very much appreciated. If I could just make one more announcement, then we will be concluding soon. I will try to turn into Vanna White here. I don't know if it shows very well, but
yes. Anyway,
this is a DVD. I hope that there's not a whole lot of glare and you're able to see it.
Mm-hmm.
But the Pudendal Neuralgia Online Patient Conference that we recorded back in April of last year and featured in this DVD are Dr. Amy Stein, Dr. Richard Marvel, Dr. Allison Shrikande, and of course, Dr. Alex Millspaugh. So she has an entire presentation here. This DVD is available on our website, but we would like to give a copy away, Alex, if you don't mind.
Yes.
See, some people have left. So if you would call a number, any number from 1 to 6, then we will send that person a copy of the DVD. So, a number from 1 to 6, Alex.
Oh, man. Well, the first one I thought it was 4. I'll say 4.
Okay, you stay with 4. So that would be, Katya. So, Katya, I will email you. You can email me the information, and we can email you a copy of the DVD. It is very interesting. It has a lot of very good information that's useful for everyone.
Great.
So anyway, thanks again, Alex.
Yes, my pleasure.
This is
everyone
very
stay
good.
Safe and healthy.
As you know, everyone will get a copy of the recording once we make sure that it's in good working condition. And everyone, please stay safe and healthy.
Yes, and I'll, Beth, it looks like someone has one more. Do I have another one? Yes, I did actually just come out with another meditation CD called Guided Meditations for 4D Healing, and that is on iTunes and CD Baby. And I'm so glad that you found the other meditation CD helpful.
Yes, and also I shared with you on the chat the website where you can find a lot of information about Dr. Millspaugh. She is simply fantastic. For you or anyone in your family to have one-on-one counseling or her guidance or meditation, anything, she's the person to go to. So I did share that with you on the chat. Let's make sure that you take a look at it. And I want you to know, Alex, I purchased the latest Tapping Summit. Also, I've been buying it for the last 3 years.
Yes.
And it is definitely worth it. I would definitely recommend tapping. It brings you from 60 to 0 in no time.
Yes, it's amazing. It is amazing.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, everyone. And this concludes this webinar. I will see you during the next one. Please visit our website, pudendalassociation.org. And let me write it. .org. I will write it on the chat, and you will know when our next webinar will be. Thank you very much, Alex, again.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.